We'll hear argument now in the case of Doe against the St. Francis School District. Mr. Rennie.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Joseph Rennie. I am representing the appellants, the Does, in this matter. This case is about an eighth grade boy who was sexually harassed and ultimately sexually abused by Kelly Sweet, a St. Francis School District teacher.
How old was he?
I believe he's 14, Your Honor. He was in eighth grade. He suffered serious psychological harm as a result of the district's failure to prevent Ms. Sweet's actions. The district court, when it dismissed...
Seems surprising. Why would he experience substantial psychological harm?
Is this a public school district? Clarify this.
I believe it is a public school district, Your Honor.
Where did you get the name St. Francis? Somebody wandered off the path.
Apparently
so. Of
course,
St. Louis, I suppose that's a private or public...
The teacher did not follow the teachings of Assisi. Judge Posner, to answer your question, there is evidence in the record. He has suffered a variety of post-traumatic stress disorder. He's had substantial treatment.
Post-traumatic stress disorder from being kissed by your teacher? Oh. All right.
Well, I know I read when I was a kid the...
Pretty phony, I must say.
I know when I was a kid, I read books about an older teacher having an affair with a young student. One thing that's been interesting to me in this case is the reality is considerably uglier than it appears in the novels. In any event, Your Honors, the district court dismissed the Doe's Title IX negligence claims, and I believe the district court's decision should be reversed for three reasons. First of all, there is testimony in the record and inferences which can be drawn from that testimony that are more than sufficient to enable the jury to find that the school district officials had actual notice.
This kind of litigation puts the school administrators in an impossible position, right? They're caught between the parents and the teacher, right? It's hard to fire teachers, and it's all ambiguous what's going on. I mean, obviously, he's a bad teacher and, you know, irresponsible and so on, but... I don't know what the administrator is supposed to do in a situation like that. Automatically believe the parents or the child?
Well, at a minimum, Your Honor, I'd submit they're expected to take precautionary measures. The school district officials here were repeatedly told that a romantic relationship was going on, an eighth grade boyfriend-girlfriend type relationship, a crush which Ms. Sweet was reciprocating at a minimum. And there is Dr. Ackerman's testimony in the record. The district court ruled that was inadmissible, but as we've explained in our briefs, we believe it is admissible. But they've indicated that at a minimum, and our steps should have been taken to ensure that Ms. Sweet and N.R. Doe were separated at all times. The school district itself had no trouble making sure that was done after Kelly Sweet confessed that there was a problem. They immediately told her, don't come into the schools anymore. Another thing for which there's evidence in the record is the parents could have been told. At that point, it is up to the parents to decide whether they want to keep their child in school or not. Further investigation could have been done. The evidence is here. District officials, the total extent of their investigation was to listen to the warnings they were given. Principal Bolster talked to Kelly Sweet.
What kind of investigation do you think they should have done?
They should have talked to N.R. Doe himself. They should not simply have taken the word of the person who is accused of wrongdoing that she didn't do any wrong. They should have talked to the student. Again, there's evidence from Dr. Ackerman in the record, that, and I think it's common sense that a jury could have found that they could talk to other students, and perhaps most importantly, they can notify the student's parents, N.R. Doe's parents, to let them decide what action they want to take.
What kind of expert is Dr. Ackerman?
He is a psychologist, and he has extensive experience consulting with schools about procedures that are intended to prevent just this sort of thing.
Does he testify a lot?
I believe he has testified before, yes. He's pretty active in the field. He's also an author of various books. Mm-hmm. In any event, in addition to there being sufficient evidence to support a finding that the school district had actual notice of a substantial risk of sexual harassment and Title IX violation to N.R. Doe, there is ample evidence in the record to support a finding that the district officials acted with deliberate indifference.
Is that enough, though, for Title IX? Doesn't it have to be actual knowledge?
Your Honor, I don't believe there does. As has been said in the Hunt case and in the Delgado case, which this court decided, the difference between actual knowledge of something sexual actually having happened and actual knowledge of a significant risk that something will happen, there is less than meets the eye. The Delgado standard and the Hunt standard is essentially if there is evidence creating a reasonable suspicion that sexual relationship or
suspicion
sexual abuse
is
about
knowledge.
To go on.
Suspicion is not knowledge.
It is tantamount to knowledge.
No,
if the
it's
suspicion,
not. Suspicion is not knowledge.
If the
Those
evidence,
are not synonyms.
Okay. It is in the sense, Your Honor, as Delgado says, that if there is evidence there that indicates that there is a very high risk of harm, suspicion is perhaps the wrong word, but if there is evidence from which you should conclude that's the case, that is actual knowledge.
Suspicion sounds like the right word. I don't understand you. Title IX does talk about actual knowledge, doesn't it? Isn't that in the Title IX?
The Supreme Court decisions that have interpreted Title IX do use the words actual knowledge.
Well,
yes.
All right, so we don't have actual knowledge here.
We have information that was presented that shows that there was a very high risk of harm. And again, under the Delgado case, Your Honor,
look, there's a difference between the high risk. Forget the high risk. The question is suspicion. Now, if you have suspicion of, you know, the world is about to blow up, yeah, you ought to act on that. That doesn't mean you know the world is going to blow up, right?
If you have information that indicates that it is highly likely, that is actual knowledge under the standard.
No, that isn't true. That doesn't make any sense at all. That erases the difference between suspicion and knowledge. You're going from the difference between suspicion and knowledge to the question, how grave is the event that you're suspicious of? That has nothing to do with whether you're suspicious, right?
Well, if the standard were that you have to, somebody has to have come to you and said, I saw this person having a sexual relationship with a student, or I saw this student.
That's
this
not
person.
The only source of actual knowledge, but there's difference between actual knowledge and suspicion. I don't know why we use the word actual. There's knowledge and there's suspicion. Now, sometimes, you know, there are things like, you know, the ostrich rule. You actually know, but you. It's so hard, the knowledge is so awful that you decide just to avoid learning it. Because you know what you're going to find out if you do. Right? You avert your eyes from what you know. That's a form of actual knowledge, of knowledge. But that's very different from suspicion.
I think, again, Your Honor, as Delgado says, and I quote, when the cases speak of a known or obvious risk that make a failure to take steps against it, they have in mind risks great enough that they are almost certain to materialize if nothing is done. I think here there was sufficient evidence that enough warnings had been given to the district administrators. They had been told there's a romantic relationship going on here. It's inappropriate. They were repeatedly told. N.R. Doe is at risk. That
but
is enough
you,
for a jury to find virtual certainty
of
harm.
Are you saying that the Tabinka, whatever her name is, that she knew that he was being sexually abused?
She knew that there was an inappropriate romantic relationship going on. She was told repeatedly it is serious enough, he is at risk.
Romantic relationship. She was told, I gather, by three teachers that they were concerned. That's different from being told there is a romantic relationship. So what's the support for your assertion?
With respect, Judge Easterbrook, they were told considerably more than there are romantic feelings here. They were told that the relationship is inappropriate. They were told that Ms. Sweet was reciprocating a crush. They were told repeatedly the teachers are concerned this boy is at risk.
Yeah, well, we're just back to at risk again. Now, I asked you for concrete evidence that the principal had been told of a romantic relationship, and I didn't hear any.
Superintendent Topinka, I believe, was told that there was a crush going on and that Kelly Sweet was reciprocating that crush. She was also told on February 25th by Ms. Gridley, the teacher, of the get-together that had happened a few days before, where there was behavior in which Ms. Sweet essentially acknowledged, I'm having a relationship with Nardo and I intend to continue it.
Your view is that she essentially acknowledged it because she didn't say anything when she was accused.
She broke into a wide grin when Gridley said, I want to see your cell phone so I can see about texting, and Gridley suspected that it was with Nardo. Sweet said no and ran into the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Lubinsky.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am here to represent the school district of St. Francis. St. Francis is a public school district. I'm not sure how it got its name.
There you go.
But it certainly is. I would like to focus on the Title IX claim. Obviously, the district court also dismissed a state law negligent infliction of emotional distress claim. I'll let my brief speak to that issue. As to the Title IX claim, there seems to be no dispute that there are two necessary elements, actual knowledge and deliberate indifference. Plaintiff has to prove both. The district court found evidence lacking on both. In order for this court to reverse, the court would have to find the district court got it wrong on both of those counts. As it relates to the actual notice, requirement of Title IX, I think it's important to take the context of actual knowledge, as Judge Posner was indicating earlier, in its full context. And I would cite this court to this court's decision in Delgado, a decision opposing counsel cited before you today. And I'm just going to read a sentence. And in Delgado, the court said, under the Supreme Court's formula, the plaintiff in a Title IX damages suit based on a teacher's behavior must prove actual knowledge of misconduct, not just actual knowledge of the risk of misconduct, and must also prove, and then it went on to talk about deliberate indifference. So we need more than just a risk. We need more than just a suspicion. We need actual knowledge on the first of those two elements. And Judge Easterbrook, in response to your question, opposing counsel cited the same evidence he cited to the district court, which is teachers came forward and said she had classroom management issues. They said she was blurring the lines between student and friends. She was, in essence, one of those teachers that let her kids in her classroom get away with a lot of things. And that was impacting these other teachers because, of course, these kids were then coming to their
school. It's a public school as opposed to a Catholic school.
Correct. And so these kids were coming into their classrooms trying to exhibit those same behaviors, sitting on lockers, writing on dry erase boards. And, of course, that caused them concern. They brought forward those concerns. Those concerns included not only classroom management, but this blurring of the lines. And it wasn't just in our dough. It was a group of students, students who came to her classroom, painted, and she seemed to be becoming friends with these students. And the teachers did report that. And the teachers reported that there was something amiss with this overly friendship relationship. That does not equate to actual knowledge of sexual harassment. Judge Posner, in response to your first question, I think, to opposing counsel, you talked about the difficulties school district administrators have when they're between teachers and the parents and students. And in this case, make no mistake about it, the student didn't come forward and the parents didn't come forward. The only evidence upon which plaintiff relies to suggest a reversal is these teachers' comments. And so what did they say? They said, construed in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, which we dispute the evidence, but that's the standard here, they say this boy had a crush on her. She was not stopping it. She was overly friendly. In fact, the reference, Judge Easterbrook, to what in this record shows that there was something romantic, the star witness upon which plaintiff relies filled out a declaration. This is all in the record. And in her original draft declaration prepared by the plaintiff's lawyers, the words romantic relationship were in her declaration. Romantic relationship. She changed that to inappropriate relationship. And when I asked her why she did that, she said very clearly, because I didn't have any knowledge or any belief that there was anything romantic. That answers your question. They thought there was something wrong. They just didn't know what it was. But what did the school district administrators do? So let's turn to the second step of the Title IX analysis. Plaintiff has to prove deliberate indifference. And, of course, that means either, as Judge Posner indicated, you know, putting your head in the sand, being an ostrich, turning a blind eye, not wanting to deal with it, or doing something that's clearly unreasonable. And so we can look at what happened in this case. What happened in this case is the teachers did come forward. And we have one, not one, but two administrators who did something about it. We have a principal who admittedly had received a notice of preliminary non-renewal, so he was about to be gone. He asked, he interviewed Kelly Sweet, and Kelly Sweet, of course, denied everything. But because the superintendent of this school district took this so seriously, she did her own investigation. What she did is she not only interviewed the star witness for the plaintiff, the former teacher, but she interviewed that witness twice. She interviewed Ms. Sweet. She interviewed two of Sweet's coworkers. And she asked questions. Have you ever seen Ms. Sweet send a text message to a student? No. Did you ever see a text message? No. Do you have any evidence to believe she's sending a text message? No. I think one teacher said that Sweet told her that she had texted a girl about being home sick. She asked, Topinka asked each of these persons, have you overheard any conversation with Sweet and anyone to suggest anything inappropriate, illegal? And each and every one of them said no. They did report the classroom management issues, and they reported concerns about just this overly friendly relationship. Now, keep in mind, this overly friendly relationship started when N.R. Doe broke his leg in the fall. He started attending Ms. Sweet's class in lieu of going to Fayette. The parents wanted that. The parents knew Ms. Sweet. She had been a prior volleyball coach of the older children of this family. They were, Ms. Sweet went over to the home of the N.R. Doe family and had involvement with the family. So the fact that these two people were close.
What was this course she was teaching, Biz World? What is that?
It's my understanding. It's like a social studies business organization type where they deal with the stock market and those sorts of issues. It's been a while since high school social studies. A good example of what I just articulated is the fact that N.R. Doe's parents were fully aware and embraced the idea of Ms. Sweet taking N.R. Doe to a Bucks game. They asked her to do that. They knew he was going to dinner with Ms. Sweet, and they were fully aware of that and approved it. I'm not suggesting anything inappropriate by the parents. I'm only suggesting that there is a very legitimate explanation for why this student and this teacher seemed overly friendly. And the reason, of course, is because they were doing things socially, albeit it may sound awkward now knowing what happened. The parents fully embraced that. But getting back to what the district did, there were interviews conducted, and each and every person who was interviewed was asked the question about actual knowledge. They were asked, are you aware of anything inappropriate? And each person answered no. Are you aware of anything illegal? And each person answered no. And each person, when I deposed them, said, I asked them, well, did you lie to Ms. Topinka? Did you actually believe there was something illegal or inappropriate going on? And each person said no. If I thought there was something illegal or sexual going on, I would have said it. And I didn't say it because I didn't believe it. Of course, everybody became surprised to learn that these two had had a sexual interaction at Ms. Sweet's home on a Sunday afternoon. And of course, what happened thereafter is Ms. Sweet was immediately suspended, ultimately criminally charged, convicted, and no longer, from that day forward, a member of the school district staff. But when you look at, under Title IX, actual notice and deliberate indifference, this school district had knowledge that there was problems, but there was absolutely nothing sexual about that knowledge. And when you look at what the school district did, the school district did react to that, and they did interviews. Plaintiff's counsel has argued to you, well, I think Judge Posner, you asked, well, what should the district have done? And his response was, well, they should have interviewed the student. You know, if the standard were, could we have done more? Could we have, you know, confiscated text messages and done searches? Then we're always going to lose. Schools are always going to lose because there's an infinite amount of avenues to take in an investigation. But there is no colorable argument in this case that the school district's actions were clearly unreasonable, which is the Title IX standard. I will rest on my brief on the remaining arguments unless there are any further questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mr. Ranney, I think your time has expired.
Completely, Your Honor? Okay.
Yes, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.